This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 15th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we have our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from the City Wire about home sales numbers, the governor's race, and football. Plus, to help us get into the mood for St. Patrick's Day celebrations this weekend, we listen to an Irish jig inside the Firman Garner Performance Studio. Also, as she does every week, Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers stops by to tell us what's up in entertainment this weekend and more. But first, the House Revenue and Tax Committee approved a tax cut while simultaneously approving a tax increase. House Bill 1039 would provide tax exemptions for certain agricultural sectors, causing an impact of approximately $10 million annually on the state. Representative Jeff Wardlaw, sponsor of the bill, says the cut will help both farmers and the state as a whole.
Those guys are really, really hurting. And with the higher prices of corn and the drought and all the things that we've been through in the last couple of years, farmers just need a little bit of help. I mean, we do feed the world, and we do just need a little bit of help. And this will give them a little bit and kind of get them back on their feet and help the state grow a little bit.
The House tax panel also approved a bill raising the timberland tax from 15 to 20 cents per acre. In a letter regarding the tax increase, Grover Norquist of Americans for Tax Reform assured GOP members that supporting the bill would not go against the taxpayer protection pledge they signed. Representative Charlie Collins told Talk Business Arkansas that the letter did not influence the vote.
And so it's really more of an insight from an objective observer or a non-participant on what we're doing. And I'm glad Norquist and his group is there to provide that kind of a service to people like me.
Both bills are currently waiting approval from the full House. Yesterday, the Arkansas House passed a bill that would change the way the state approves charter schools. The bill by Republican Representative Mark Viviano of Searcy would designate the State Education Department and not the Board of Education as the primary authorizer of charter schools.
And the real emphasis here is focus. Focus on the charter schools, allowing that panel to be able to understand what those applications are about, to evaluate those, and make the proper recommendation.
Viviano had originally proposed legislation that would have taken the power to approve charter schools from the state board and created a new independent commission to consider applications. The proposal, unanimously approved by the House, will instead require the state education commissioner to appoint a panel of his staff to review and approve charter school applications. The Board of Education would have the power to review that panel's decisions. Arkansas's Medicaid director has sent a memo to federal officials outlining the terms of an agreement reached concerning the expansion of health coverage in the state under the Affordable Care Act. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas has more.
I think the most interesting part of the memo deals with kind of two factors. Number one, it talks about how there will be some cost sharing by some members who might take up this health insurance through the Medicaid dollars moving over into the private health insurance exchange. And then the other thing is that the impact on the exchange itself could actually lead to a reduction in enrollment in the current Medicaid programs. We'll see where this goes. We still don't have hard numbers from the state or feds on what we may be talking about financially, but this memo certainly clears up some of the major framework for the debate that is moving forward at the state capitol.
Republicans have not committed to a plan, but many have said they like the private option being proposed. Horse racing is well underway at Oaklawn in Hot Springs, and there are only a few events left before racing season ends April 13th. According to Jennifer Hoyt with the racetrack, the much-anticipated Rebel Stakes begins this Saturday.
The Rebel Stakes, it's a $600,000 race. That's the purse of it. Plus, this year, there's 85 points available for horses that are looking to make the Kentucky Derby. This is our last big prep race for horses wanting to make the Arkansas Derby and the Kentucky Derby beyond that.
Hoyt says the first race for Rebel Stakes starts at 1 p.m. tomorrow and gates open at 11 a.m. There are 5 weeks left in the racing season. The League of Women Voters of Washington County last night held a forum at the Fayetteville Public Library regarding expansions to public and alternative transit in the area. While several topics such as light rail and more buses were discussed, Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan briefly touched on his plan to increase sidewalk proliferation in the city. The city stands to receive between $1.3 and $1.5 million from the statewide half-cent highway sales tax, and Jordan intends to use $1 million of those dollars on sidewalks.
Right now, we're putting about $500,000 a year in our sidewalks, and we are doing about 12,000 running feet. I want to increase that to 36,000 running feet, which will take us, we'll spend about between $1.3 and $1.5 million per year over the next 4 years.
Earlier this month, the Fayetteville City Council approved a list of sidewalk improvement and street overlay projects for 2013. The projects listed include more than 27,000 feet of new and replacement sidewalks in the city, with nearly 10,000 of those feet going toward new sidewalks in Ward 1 alone. We'll have more from last night's forum next week on Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Metropolitan Statistical Area continues to grow. According to data released yesterday by the U.S. Census Bureau, the overall population in the three Arkansas counties of Washington, Benton, and Madison, and McDonald County, Missouri, grew by nearly 8,300 people from 2011 to 2012, representing a growth rate of 1.7%. For the year, that growth rate was the 38th highest out of 381 metropolitan areas in the country. The Census Bureau reports that as of July 1st of last year, the overall population of the area was estimated at just more than 482,000 people. In contrast, the overall population of the Fort Smith MSA declined by 0.1%, representing a loss of about 345 residents from 2011 to 2012, resulting in an estimated overall population of more than 281,500 people. Tonight, mostly clear with lows in the lower to mid-50s. Mostly sunny tomorrow with highs from 70 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 76 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. And cloudy tomorrow night with a 60% chance of thunderstorms and a low of 47 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of thunderstorms and a low around 53 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Joining me now on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers politics, business, and much more for the entire listening area. Hello, sir. How goes your day?
Well, it goes well. The Friday before spring break, so if we can just get Friday behind us, we're good to go, right?
We will be good to go. Spring break, but you guys, things don't slow down for you guys. You've been putting out a lot of reports this week, and your home sales report came out earlier.
Yes, the first, the Arkansas Home Sales Report, just by way of reminder, we look at 14 of Arkansas's most populated counties, and that may not sound like a lot because there are 75 total counties, but it accounts for between 70% and 75% of total Arkansas home sales. And our January report showed good numbers for the three of the four largest metro areas. It showed that total home sales in those markets were up almost 15%. Unfortunately, home sales in the Fort Smith metro area were down almost 20%, with the average home sales price down about 11%. But home sales were up a little over 25% in central Arkansas, up almost 25% in the Jonesboro area, and where you are there in the northwest Arkansas, a little over 7%. So that trend that we saw that became strong in 2012 with increase in home sales and some would say more importantly an improvement and increase in average home sales price is continuing for at least three of the four largest metro markets into 2013. Now, 1 month does not make a trend, but
right
to have a 15% number coming in, that's a good start to the year. And the realtors we talked to say that the February and March phone calls that they're receiving does not suggest that it's going to let up much. So let's keep our fingers crossed on that particular segment of Arkansas's economy.
And as we mentioned, spring break coming up, and people will be traveling, probably driving or even flying. And so I want to talk about emplanements now.
Well, emplanements, the reason we track emplanements out of the XNA, there, Fort Smith, and Little Rock. Those are the three commercial fields in Arkansas, commercial airports. And emplanements are a direct measure. They're a good measure of business and tourism travel. And what we're seeing is we begin to see kind of a decline in emplanements in northwest Arkansas and in Fort Smith, particularly in Fort Smith in the fourth quarter of last year. And we're continuing to see that to some extent at XNA and Fort Smith. The emplanements at the February emplanements at Fort Smith were down about a little over 6%. And at XNA, the emplanements were essentially flat compared to February 2012. And at XNA, emplanements are up for the first 2 months of the year, just up a little over 1.3%. And in all of 2012, emplanements out of XNA were up just 0.4%. So, that bears watching. And there are a lot of factors that go into that, too. It's not only the local economy. The airlines are struggling with higher fuel costs. They're cutting capacity, which is to say they're cutting planes out of the fleet. We've had some of the issues with American Airlines now emerge. So it bears watching. We'll continue to watch that, and we'll hope that those employment figures out of those two airports will reverse the trend in 2013.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. And something else people are keeping an eye on is the race for governor in Arkansas.
Right. And especially here in the 3rd District, which is most of what the CityWire coverage area in your listening area is. And earlier this week, we had U.S. Representative Steve Womack out of Rogers, I'll get that out in a second, was speaking with the Little Rock radio show, talk show there. And he said that he was asked about the governor's race and the Senate race in 2014, two high-profile races coming up in less than 2 years. And he said, quote, "I have not ruled anything out." And so that led to immediate speculation among all the political junkies in Arkansas that he was considering both the governor's race and the Senate race. So the CityWire, we asked, are you considering these? And his spokeswoman, Claire Burkhoff, said, no, he's not going to be running for governor. And so we sent her his comments, the transcripts of the radio show, and she replied again with, he is not running for governor. So it's still kind of a mystery. There are some folks who still think he's thinking about the governor's race. However, the important thing is though he is not denied an interest in the U.S. Senate race. And it could come down to him and U.S. Senator Mark Pryor, the Democrat. Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar has said he wants to run for that race. So we're, we're less than 2 years out from the election, but we're getting close. We're just a little over a year out from the primary. So I know we just came out of election, but we are about to head back into what will be a very interesting election cycle in Arkansas.
And finally, I would like to ask you about football. I know the Arkansas legislature can discuss, they've discussed a lot of things this session, but football?
Yeah, so much for these folks. You said they wanted to go to Little Rock to push for smaller government. Now we have government saying who should be playing who, apparently. And we could laugh about this if it wasn't moving through the legislature. If it was just a bill that had been filed and
sure,
no one was taking it serious, we could laugh about it. But this bill is moving through the House side, and it's a bill that filed by Representative Andy Mayberry, he's a Republican from Hensley, and it would force essentially University of Arkansas and Arkansas State to play at least one regular season football game. And supposedly, some of the proceeds would go to a charitable cause. I guess that was his hook. But
what's the reason behind it?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of folks have wanted or say they would like to see the two teams play.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. But Senator Uvalde Lindsay, the Democrat there from Fayetteville, he couldn't believe it. He said it was that type of legislation. He used the word outside the boundary of what the Arkansas legislature should be regulating. And a lot of the legislators I've talked to say the same thing, that this, you know, this really ought to be left up to the respective universities, their athletic department. You know, this gets down into the what's defined as micromanaging.
Mm-hmm.
But it's moving through the House side. I will be very, I think the Senate, hopefully cooler heads will prevail over in the Senate and it'll go away quietly. But it's just an example of, you know, every time those legislators convene in Little Rock, sometimes us reporters talk about, you know, what silly is going to come out this year. Well, this may get the prize for silly this year.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking to me today, and I hope that you get a little bit of break on spring break.
We're going to try. I hope you do the same.
Thank you so much. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers politics, business, and much more for the entire listening area. Thanks again, Michael.
You're welcome.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, I brought in the president of the Ozark Blues Society, Roger Plourd, and he talks about the 2013 Blues in the Natural State. It's now a two-day festival. That's April 5th and 6th. Headliners, Ernest Guitar Roy, James Super Chicken Johnson, and John Lee Hooker Jr. Hear all about it Friday night at 9 on the Generic Blues Show. We'll see you then.
The second annual St. Patrick's Day Parade in Fayetteville begins at noon tomorrow, but there wouldn't be a second parade if Don Brown and his friends hadn't helped organize the first one last year. Earlier this week, Don stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio along with Richie McCusker and Carol Witter, two musicians participating in this weekend's festivities. During their visit, Don told Kyle Kellums and I a little more about the short history of the event.
Last year, some friends of mine were sitting around and we were talking, and it dawned on us that St. Patrick's Day fell on Saturday. And so I said, why don't we do anything in Fayetteville for St. Patrick's Day? I can't believe it. All these towns around Arkansas and the United States do such a good job. And so the three of us put our heads together and our backs and started putting it all together. 3 weeks and 20 entries and about 250 people on the street. They had a parade for what it was worth. So
what did you learn in that first year that you've applied to the second year?
Well, you know, what was really funny about it, Kyle, was that you know, I went home after the parade, and I thought, well, nice, that was a lot of fun, and kind of really had put it aside. And almost to the next day, I started getting calls and emails and Facebook messages and what have you, saying, hey, this was so much fun. We got to do it. We got to do it bigger. We got to do some more. And people started contacting me, like Carol Witter and Richie McCusker. And next thing I know, we have a more than a parade. We have a celebration on our hands, and it's really going to be a lot of fun. I'm so excited.
All right, we're going to find out more about the celebration in a few minutes. Let's bring Carol and Richie in here. True, you made contact after you heard about the first-year parade?
Yes. I know. Richie is the one who contacted me, so maybe you can
say.
Yeah,
well, this past few years, we've actually gone down to Eureka Springs for St. Patrick's Day weekend, and I didn't know that there was anything happening here in Fayetteville last year. Came back, saw a few things on Facebook and on the Fayetteville Flyer about it, and I contacted the Fayetteville Flyer to get more information, and they put me in touch with Dawn. So I just reached out to Dawn and said, if you need my efforts and help trying to do anything for next year, let me know. So we've been in touch by email for about a year now, and we've never actually met until today before the show. The busy lives will lead.
So why the decision for you two to join in, and why did the decision to do it again? I mean, was it last year like, oh, it would be fun, but is it daunting this year knowing that you're kind of the guy in charge because people started calling you wanting this, wanting to be bigger, wanting to be better?
Well, I've been involved in a lot of different things in Fayetteville, the Mardi Gras for several years, different things. I love festivals by nature, and so this was just a lot of fun. And when, you know, you see something like this with such a tremendous response, I mean, overwhelming response, I just think you ought to go with it. Everybody had such a great time. And I'm hoping that's what we'll have again this year.
A couple years ago, I started having a regular Irish circle every third Saturday. And in the past, probably for the past 10 years, we've had various groups try to have Irish sessions in different parts of town, but they were never on a regular basis. And so there's little pockets of Irish musicians, but they've never connected. So what we decided to do is have a regular session every third Saturday, and eventually people start hearing about it. And of course, we put it on the announcements on KUAF. And also a lady named Donna Jean Glasgow, who's a whistle player and a piano teacher. She started a Facebook page called Northwest Arkansas Celtic Musicians. And so that was just another way to be visible, just for us to connect. And so I was excited this year that we're finally starting to connect with each other.
What will the two of you be doing as part of the celebration?
So I'm an accordion player. So following the parade on Saturday, we're going to be playing music at 1:30 outside the square. So we'll be there for about an hour or so. And then Saturday night, the Northside Rotary Club are hosting a fundraiser in the garden room. And again, we'll be playing music there as well.
When you first contacted Don, did you contact him by email or did you call?
By email.
Because I was going to say, if he called, you'd say, whatever you want to do, right? I mean, there's a legitimacy here.
Yeah,
to the,
yeah.
You are obviously not a Northwest Arkansas native.
No, not a Northwest Arkansas native at all. I've been living here for just over 3 years now. So I'm from a small little place in County Armagh. My wife is from Fayetteville, Arkansas. So I've known her for about 10 years now. I guess you can say I knew how to call the hogs before I knew what the hogs actually were. I met her and I met Joanna in Edinburgh about 10 years ago. And I've been living here for 3 and married for 2.5. So, yeah.
We're going to have a sample of a jig, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would like to ask you each, though, quickly about your instruments that you brought with you. Can you give me a little?
Okay. I have a little two-row button Irish accordion, and that's what most traditional accordion players play in Ireland, and it's tuned a certain way just for Irish music. And it's called a diatonic accordion. It's kind of like a harmonica. You know, you can only play certain notes on it. And so, and Richie has a piano accordion.
Yeah, I play the piano accordion, and I don't know how long mine's been around. It was handed down to me from a cousin, and before my cousin, it was handed down to her from an uncle. So it's been around for quite a while.
Have you guys known how to play those since you were young? Because they always looked, I don't know anything about them, but they've always looked very complicated.
Yeah, I was 7 when I got my first accordion. Yeah.
And I always call this my midlife crisis instrument. I was originally a bass and piano player and studied classical music mainly. But when my daughters went off to college, I got interested in world music. And because of my heritage, I'm half Irish, I got very interested in different button boxes. And so in Ireland, that's very much a traditional instrument of Ireland. So I just gravitated towards it.
I'm going to ask this, knowing that I grew up in a part of the world, the Ozarks, where people have preconceived ideas and sometimes think we're more quaint here than reality. But there is this idea that there are all these young people in Ireland, especially rural Ireland, who are playing music all the time.
Well, that's the true for me, for the lifestyle that I grew up with. My grandfather actually was one of 9 brothers, and they all played traditional Irish music together, and they toured all over England and the States as well. They've played in Carnegie Hall. So my dad is one of 7, and each one of them play an instrument, and between those 7, there's 19 cousins, and most of us all play something. So I did grow up with that, and, you know, when I was 12, 13, 14, I was hanging out in a local pub on a Friday night playing traditional Irish music with aunts and uncles and local neighbors who played music also.
Thank you for not dispelling that. Thank you for reinforcing my image. Well, what would you like to play for us?
Well, I think we will try to play Saddle the Pony, which is a little jig, and then followed by Kesh Jig.
Okay.
And usually we're playing this with 7 musicians.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of, we're missing our rhythm section, so we'll see if this works or not.
Okay, Don, let's go back to the celebration. Take us through Saturday. What's going to happen?
Okay, well, what'll happen beginning Saturday morning, all the participants in the parade, which are we're closing in on about 50 different entries right now, from police and fire to civic organizations to the traditional floats and silliness and stuff like that. They'll all start mustering over here behind the Campbell Bell Building parking lot about 11 o'clock and sharply at noon, because that's our permit. We will roll. And so we'll go out around the square, go down East Street to Dixon, and then we'll come down the hill and we'll end down at the Hog Hoss Walton Arts Center area. And that'll be about it. And I think that the Ozark Highlanders Pipe Band they're kind of worried about that distance and having to blow those pipes for that
long.
Sure. I told them not to worry. They could walk as long as they wanted to. From there, what we're going to do, and the once the parade disperses, is, of course, Carol and Richie and their crew will have everybody at the town center in front and playing their wonderful music, and the McCafferty Irish dancers are going to be there to join them. I think that's going to be a tremendous show in itself. Then after that, I think there are several bars down on Dixon Street that intend to have a green beer crawl of some kind. I know Jose's and Infusions, I know, are openly out there going to attract people in. So it ought to be a wonderful afternoon. And then that night, the Northside Rotary is going to have what they call St. Patty's by Northside, which is their annual fundraiser, and they chose St. Patrick's today. I think they kind of caught the fever, too, and decided that would be a wonderful time for them to do that. And basically, they're going to have Carol and their guys there again playing their music. They've got some local craft beer makers that are going to be handing out samples, and they're going to have plenty of food, and it's open to the public. And it's their way of supporting their charities. So it'll be a great day. And then, of course, I think all the bars on Dixon Street come Sunday have their traditional pub crawl ready to go.
Because Sunday is the official.
That's right, exactly.
The St. Patrick's Day Parade in Fayetteville will begin tomorrow at noon. The parade will start at the downtown square before heading west on Dixon Street toward the Walton Arts Center. For more information, visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
It is Friday, March 15th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's got a 100-foot double down, a 70-foot double up, twist and turn, high-speed float, and Class 5 custom-designed lap restraints. I have no idea what I just said, but apparently you'll need all those things if you ride Outlaw Run, the new wooden roller coaster that opens this weekend at Silver Dollar City.
Now, are you a roller coaster person?
Oh, no. No. They had a media day on Wednesday. The media were the first people on the coaster after the Hershens, who own the park. And the media came from all over the country, including like the Travel Channel, because it's a wooden coaster.
People are really into wooden roller coasters.
Wooden coaster people are enthusiastic.
I think the last one I rode was pretty tall. It was at Knott's Berry Farm in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty tall.
Well, I heard one webmaster of a site devoted to roller coasters say that when he put up the original story that they were going to build Outlaw Run, they had 110,000 hits in just a little bit.
Did he say what the deal is with wooden coasters? Like what the attraction is between that and as opposed to a non-wooden one?
I think it's just the idea of the historic construction of a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. I know that in layman's terms, this thing costs $10 million.
Oh, wow.
It has a Western theme. It's the world's first and only double barrel roll on a wooden coaster.
Double barrel. Is that like on your side?
It's like foof, foof.
Instead of over your head. Instead of like up and over your head, it's to the side and around.
Right.
Right. Okay.
It's the world's steepest drop on a wooden coaster. You go up 10 stories and then it makes this little turn.
Really?
And then it drops 16 stories.
Oh, gosh.
It's the only wooden roller coaster to twist upside down 3 times, and it's the second fastest wooden roller coaster in the world with a top speed of 68 miles an hour.
Wow.
And my designated rider said it was fabulous and went back and rode again.
Oh,
it's got two sneaky things. It's got the thing I told you, you know, where you don't just go up 10 and then drop. Mm-hmm. There's a little
turn.
Woozle.
Woozle?
Yes, there's a little woozle.
Is that the technical term?
I think it just made that up. But maybe coaster aficionados will like it and adopt it.
Okay.
And then the barrel rolls come when you don't expect them.
Oh, okay.
So Silver Dollar City opens for spring break this weekend and March 20th through 24th, the 28th through the 30th, and April 5 and 7. And you can see video of the coaster at nwaonline.com.
Awesome.
We got a whole bunch of other stuff this weekend.
Okay, let's bring it.
In What's Up Today, our staff looked at four regional zoos for spring break travel. Mm-hmm. It should be called the World's Cutest Pictures Edition.
Lots of cute furry animals.
Adorable baby elephant at the Oklahoma Aww. City Zoo. She'll be to April 15th. A great new sea lion exhibit at the St. Louis Zoo where you get to go through one of those acrylic tunnels and actually be like nose to nose with the sea lions.
Oh, okay.
A new polar bear exhibit at the Kansas City Zoo.
What? What? Okay, I know where I'm going.
And a new penguin exhibit at the Little Rock Zoo.
Excellent.
And, of course, there are all sorts of events at the libraries and museums and parks for spring break that are all in What's Up Today. And it's St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Of course.
So there's a parade at noon tomorrow in Fayetteville, one at 2 o'clock tomorrow in Eureka Springs, and one at 3 o'clock tomorrow in Fort Smith. And the Goddess Festival opens tonight at the Omni Center in Fayetteville. The Spring Antique Show and Sale is this weekend at the Inn of the Ozarks Convention Center in Eureka Springs. And, you know, that little exhibit, The Works of Norman Rockwell, is still on show at Crystal Bridges.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I have not.
You
I have tickets, but I have not. I have not been yet.
Okay.
And in music, Kevin Kinder, our music writer, says to tell you, Ray Price is going to be at the Downstream Casino west of Joplin, Missouri tonight.
Okay.
Showtime is 8 o'clock. Gary Mullen, the Queen Tribute Show, is at the Walton Arts Center tonight at 8 o'clock. Tickets start at $25. And the Gregoire Moret Quartet. Please forgive me if I butchered that.
Let me help you. Gregoire Moret.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I had Robert Ginsberg.
This is what we call a reader's vocabulary. Jazz show tonight. At 7 and
9.
Saturday, not
it's,
tonight.
It's Saturday.
Saturday at 7 and 9. See, I got all confused.
Okay.
Say that again.
Gregoire Moret.
It's really much prettier that way. 7 and 9 Saturday at the Walton Arts Center, and tickets start at $11.
Uh-huh.
Fabulous. I think this week you may need to read more about it, so go pick up a copy of the paper.
Excellent. So they can find What's Up, which is in the newspaper every Friday.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday nights beginning at 10 p.m. On this Saturday's edition of Shades of Jazz, I will feature music from Sergio Mendez, Dave Glasser, Kevin Mahogany, Pat Metheny, and also the group you hear in the background. That's Larry Coryell reading a multinational group of musicians that call themselves Bombay Jazz. The recording you're hearing is live in London, and it incorporates the musics of American jazz, Brazil, and India. All this and more on Shades of Jazz beginning at 10 p.m. this Saturday.
Familiar storybook characters have had a resurgence in popular culture during recent years. Examples include the creation of a handful of live-action Snow White movies and television shows like Once Upon a Time and Grimm. The most recent story to join the mix is the film Oz the Great and Powerful. Wayne Bell, who covers pop culture for Ozarks at Large, recently sat down with our own Kyle Kelms to discuss how the film has been received.
If you're expecting some sort of, I guess, continuity, I don't know, but it came out this weekend and did pretty well. With the box office, but the reviews have certainly said what we thought we knew, which was that it was beautiful and the costumes and things like that were great. But they've also said what we thought we knew, which is a little bit of why do this?
Well, I mean, you have been unenthusiastic since it was announced it was coming out. I think it's an opportunity to take well-known characters who are in the public domain and sort of have fun and tweak them a bit. I remember several years ago there was the book Ahab's Wife, which was sort of taking this character who was only mentioned in one sentence in Moby Dick and exploring her life. I think there is some opportunity. There's some opportunity here.
Yeah.
This is showing us how the wizard got to Oz.
But, I mean, you've had Alice in Wonderland and this, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you know. It's like, are there no original ideas? Even on Broadway, they're using a ton of old, you know, kind of fair movies and turning them into musicals.
Clueless and things like that.
On TV this season, I've noticed almost every show from Girls to Homeland to, you know, pretty much every show that's out there has done one of those weird Sopranos Mad Men episodes where it just follows one character. And it's like, are we out of new techniques or new ideas of things to do?
And Grimm's Fairy Tales are, of course, the hot property right now. You have a couple of popular shows on network television, and you had all the Snow White movies last year, and there are more this summer. Well, I doubt there is a dearth of new ideas. But isn't it safer to go with known characters? If you're the studios or the networks, people know who Snow White is. They know who the Wizard of Oz is. And so you have this built-in audience.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching a documentary over the weekend about the Wizard of Oz, and it said when it first came out, it wasn't that big of a hit. It became a hit when it got rebroadcast on television.
It's true.
And I don't know if the studio was kind of banking that this was going to grow with the word of mouth, but I would think that this is the kind of movie that if you really wanted to see it, you've already seen it. And I don't know that
you,
it necessarily
the
has
new?
The new one. I don't know if the new one has staying power, you know, where it's even going to last a month at number one, let alone we're going to talk about it like it was an amazing cinematic achievement. It just, you know, and the other interesting thing that I learned about from reading the reviews and even David Edelstein on CBS Sunday Morning was talking about it. The original part of the wizard in this new movie was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. And he backed out. And from what I understand, when you watch it the whole time, the one thing that really doesn't work is James Franco.
Who is
just
playing
not
the wizard.
Yeah, it doesn't have that kind of wonder about it. And you do sort of wonder when you're watching it, you know, what could Robert Downey Jr. or somebody like that have done with it? Somebody who has that presence. Where James Franco, you know, it's just kind of an odd choice. But there's something that feels very cold about these movies. That
calculated?
Yeah. Like, you can see the money on screen, mm-hmm. so they're very expensive. But you also get the feeling like they're just there to make money.
Right.
Whereas even with something like The Dark Knight a few years ago, or 5-6 years ago now.
Again, a familiar character.
Right. But you felt like with the Heath Ledger thing, the performance, you know, that he would inevitably win an Oscar for, you felt like he was bringing something new. You know, even Al Pacino and Dick Tracy or Jack Nicholson and in Batman originally, there was something new. And it just, it's just a recycling of ideas. And in the case of where you're taking a property that's 60 or 70 years old and retouching it, it's kind of, it just feels cold and calculated.
Is there, this might be putting you on the spot, is there a well-known story or a series of well-known characters you would like to see explored more?
Well, I think you could always take one of the lesser-known ones, and I think that that would be the smarter thing to do.
I see.
Like Alice in Wonderland, in some way, I think maybe worked a little bit, only because it wasn't, you know, Disney's most famous.
Right.
You know, if they're going to redo Snow White or Beauty and the Beast, then you're in trouble. But you know, I would think that's where you would start. Take the lesser known.
So maybe get the backstory, the interesting backstory on the Cheshire Cat. Why is he always smiling?
Right. He's had Botox or something.
I think that's well put. Is there anything coming out in the next month that you're looking forward to?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Bell covers pop culture for Ozarks at Large. He joins us almost every week inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
Little Rock's new Children's Library and Learning Center will have its grand opening ceremony tonight. The 30,000-square-foot facility is part of the Central Arkansas Library System and is inviting families to come check it out. Maggie Carroll from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock toured the facility and reports it isn't your average library.
You know, I don't even have a key yet.
That's Don Ernst, the director of the Children's Library. He leads me into a large unfinished space.
This space, this 5,000 square foot space here, it takes a lot of different forms and shapes, right? But certainly a lot of active learning that could be from boat building to a recording space, robotics. The idea is, I think, is to help kids make the connection between using their hands and the learning that's connected upstairs.
We're standing in a maker space. What that means exactly will be determined by children visiting the library. Ernst explains how they decided how to structure it.
We start from the beginning. The first thing we did, we hosted an all-day session with 199 kids, ages 11 through 19. And we put them in intergenerational teams.
The focus group of children helped guide and shape the design of the library. Ernst says they came up with three things they wanted to include.
First was, want a place that's filled with light and color and is safe. The second thing they said is they wanted a place to move and to dance and to perform. And thus, the theater, and we'll see that in a minute. The third thing they said was pretty poignant, which was, we want a place to eat. And we extrapolated from that, not just a place to eat, but a place to cook.
The kitchen is colorful and open, easily able to accommodate large groups of children. Ernst says kids will learn about nutrition here, something many in Arkansas don't know enough about, using vegetables and fruits they will grow on the surrounding 6 acres of land. We leave the kitchen, stepping on color-changing tiles.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going down the hallway into the theater space, part of our backstage space, storage space for costumes, set designs, whatever. So this is backstage.
The theater can seat up to 165 people comfortably. The library will host traveling shows, but will also offer drama and theater workshops for children of all ages. The learning isn't restrained inside the library walls, as with most traditional educational spaces.
All right.
Let me go.
Nice space.
See that door right there?
Push out. Oh.
Sorry.
Other door. Thank you.
Outside, walkways and pathways have been incorporated into the design. The various ecoregions of Arkansas are represented in different quadrants, with simulated wetlands in one area and deciduous trees in another. Ernst walks me over to yet another learning space, the greenhouse.
One of the things that we want to do is to try to create a lot of spaces for kids to learn in a way that isn't always controlled and directed by adults.
The projects in the greenhouse will have the potential to be student-run, with kids taking the lead on what they want to grow and learn about.
The real potential and value of this place is for kids to explore and to learn on their own and to see that learning can be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the other opportunity we have is to connect that kind of learning with kids learning to read and love to read.
We walk back into the library and into the most obvious learning space of all, a room filled with books. Rows and rows of shelves are piled high with colorful books for all ages, from babies and toddlers all the way up to young adults. Reading areas with small chairs and desks, as well as laptops and iPad stations, surround the books. Don Ernst describes what he is envisioning while sitting on a child-sized beanbag chair, leaning up against a brightly painted wall.
So I hope that what we do is to help foster a lot of kids' imagination, to build a great foundation for reading, which creates the, you know, is really a foundation for every subsequent form of learning. But the other thing is, I hope they know that this is a place where they can come and relax and feel unhurried and welcome and safe and help find their own future.
The library hopes to serve not only children, but entire families as well. The the programs and services provided will continue to develop as the Children's Library and Learning Initiative grow and expand after this weekend's grand opening. In Little Rock, I'm Maggie Carroll.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Dan Kraft, Special Projects Reporter for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Glad to have you here, and every time you come by, it's to talk about a story coming out in the Sunday paper, and this time it's a story written by Ron Wood.
It is. Ron covers some of our regional stuff as well as courts, and this time he's put together the complete overview of everybody's favorite summer activity.
Swimming.
Road construction.
Of course.
So, basically, he's looking at some of the projects that we've heard about for a long time, particularly for your listeners in Northwest Arkansas. The list is, you know, pretty standard. We've heard about Bella Vista Bypass, 540 improvements, interchanges, 412 bypass, better roads to the airport.
Yes.
They've all been on the list for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they've got some money.
Okay.
The half-cent sales tax that voters approved last fall, as well as some federal money coming in. So a lot of these projects that have been on the drawing board are about to come to a neighborhood near you. So be ready for the orange barrels and the flashing lights, not just this summer, but for several construction seasons to come.
So what do you know what's going to be first? What's the first thing that we'll be seeing this summer?
Well, a few of the projects are ongoing. They're sort of extensions of other projects. Your folks in Fayetteville will see more work on 265 Crossover Road as that eventually tries to become an eastern corridor that will run all the way north to Rogers and try to relieve traffic on US 71B and on 540.
Mm-hmm. And 540 will also be seeing some work, right?
Right. Anybody who went through, well, they were doing the widening work to make three lanes each way between MLK and Weddington in Fayetteville. Right. They're going to carry that widening project in steps northward all the way up to to Bentonville.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when you get to Bentonville, eventually, you will see the Bella Vista Bypass. Now, they didn't get all the money to build that. That's a $300-plus million project. But there is several more projects ongoing, at least to make the two-lane section of that out in the Hiawassee area.
So there's a lot of different things happening. Has any thought been given to doing them at different times? I mean, obviously, like you said, the 540 construction is going to be done in phases moving north. But, you know, there's also going to be work on 412. So...
Right. Well, there's work ongoing on 412 right now. The cable barriers in the medians that you've seen on 540 and some on I-40 for the folks down the River Valley, they're putting those in on 412 between Siloam Springs and Springdale. The idea of the 412 bypass in Springdale, which would actually keep some of the truck traffic that's going east-west from having to navigate through town, they're still in the engineering and environmental parts of that study. Now, the new road to Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport is going to come off that 412 bypass. So at least part of that bypass has to get built before the airport road can go in.
So, okay. So the road is going to go from 412, let's see, north?
To 412, actually. It will basically loop through the north edge of Springdale. It'll come off the existing 412 not far from the bridge over Beaver Lake.
Okay.
And then it will tie back into 412. West of Springdale, actually out at the very edge of Taneytown. So you'll get a straighter shot from Siloam through that rural area. And if you're not going into Springdale, you could loop around on this bypass from the Taneytown area all the way around toward the lake and keep going east toward Huntsville or Harrison.
All right. So people are going to probably need to give themselves more time for commuting and things in the morning, or are they going to try and work around the rush hours?
They're obviously trying to work around rush hours all they can. That's not possible in every case. And there are other smaller projects going on, too. Some of them are still state and federal funded, like the flyover in Fayetteville that's going to finally connect northbound College Avenue to the Fulbright Expressway. Others are just city or county projects. Some of the other state and federally funded projects, your listeners in Fort Smith are obviously well aware by now that they're redoing 540 south of Interstate 40 down there, and it's causing plenty of hangups for them. Even in the rural areas, you'll see some improvements in various projects to a lot of state highways.
And you said some of these have been on the books for a while, so it's just been a matter of collecting enough funds to get them up and going?
It's a combination of having the money available, and that's partially the sales tax that was passed, partially some changes in the federal money. And some of these projects are, it takes a long time to get your environmental reviews, your engineering your dirt work, the right-of-way acquisition, just to actually get the land to build the roads on can take years. So some of these have been in the pipeline for a while, waiting not just on money, but on the preliminary steps you've got to take before you ever start seeing orange barrels and heavy equipment.
Is there anywhere online where people can go to maybe see kind of a master plan or some visual aids of what this will look like?
Well, they could always go to our website because we've posted the presentation the Highway Department mm-hmm. did on some of these projects that are upcoming.
And that's nwaonline.com?
It is.
Okay, so people can do that. And if people want to know more about the story, it's in Sunday's paper.
Right. The Daily Record in Bentonville, the Morning News in Rogers and Springdale, and the Northwest Arkansas Times in Fayetteville.
All right. We'll look forward to reading that this weekend. Thank you, Dan.
I appreciate it.
Dan Kraft is Special Projects Reporter for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring real estate agents, firms, and teams in the March 18th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Siloam Springs. And speaking of Siloam Springs, congratulations to the Golden Eagles of John Brown University. The men's basketball team is advancing in the NAIA Division I National Basketball Tournament. They have advanced to the round of 16 and will play their next game today, so congratulations to them. We have some tickets to give away. We had people email us for a pair of free Dirtfoot tickets. Dirtfoot will be playing at 10 o'clock at George's tonight, so we put the entrance names into the ceramic cow. And the winner is Aspen Hadabaugh. Congratulations. We will contact you, and your name will be at Will Call. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Before we leave today, we will end with some sound from the new roller coaster that Becca Martin Brown discussed earlier in the show. Thanks again for listening, and have a fantastic weekend.